The headlines. A 10-year-old Palestinian girl dies in the hospital days after being wounded in Israeli airstrikes in the Gaza Strip. The town of Pisky in eastern Ukraine becomes the new flashpoint in the battle for the control of Donetsk amid conflicting reports about the town falling to Russian troops. Also in this newscast, Taiwan shrugs off China's one country, two systems model and holds a fresh live fire drill amid simmering tensions. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. A Palestinian girl succumbs to her wounds sustained during recent Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip. 10-year-old Layan Al-Shaer was critically injured after Israeli missiles hit a residential neighborhood in the city of Beit Hanun last Friday. Her death brings to 48 the number of Gazans killed during the three-day Israeli onslaught in the besieged territory. Four women and 17 children are among the dead, while some 360 people were wounded. Response to Israeli attacks, the Islamic Jihad resistance movement fired hundreds of rockets at Israeli cities, including Tel Aviv, Sderot, and Ashkelon. And Egypt broker truce ended the latest bout of Israeli strikes on Gaza. Our Gaza-based correspondent Ashraf Shannon explains how the Palestinians have reacted to Palestinian Layan Al-Shaer's death.
This morning, Layan Al-Shaer, a 10-year-old girl from Gaza Strip, died after succumbing to her wounds. She was injured Friday evening during an Israeli airstrike. Her death brings to 48 the number of Palestinians killed during the three-day onslaught on the Gaza Strip, including some 17 children and three women. Over 360 people have been injured. Layan Al-Shaer was a kind of famous young girl in Gaza because she was taking part in theatrical acts in the Gaza Strip, and this has been very emotional for her friends and family. Not only she's a 10-year-old girl, but she's very talented, and this is just a sad loss of life for Palestinians. The Israeli regime for decades and throughout their wars and attacks on Palestinians, especially in Gaza, the number of child fatalities and child injuries was very high. And the reason for that is that out of nearly 2 million people living in the Gaza Strip, around 60% of them are children under the age of 18.
London rights groups, including the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Friends of Al-Aqsa, and Stop the War Coalition, have joined forces to call on the British government to stop supporting Israel in its aggression against the Palestinians. As casualties mounted from the regime's latest bombardment of Gaza, demonstrators demanded action from whoever takes over as the next British Prime Minister. Amina Taylor has more from London.
Tragedy, injustice, and destruction prompted a group of London rights organizations to call an emergency demonstration in support of Palestine and Palestinians. The Israeli bombardment of Gaza was the worst it's been since the May 2021 war that killed 260 Palestinians and destroyed thousands of homes and businesses. This new assault cost the lives of at least 47 Palestinians. A third of the scores killed were children. For those attending the demonstration opposite Downing Street, the official residence of the British Prime Minister, they needed to be present to raise their voice against the injustice.
What we've witnessed over the last few days is very familiar, but no less horrific. Once again, Israel has been bombing the Palestinian people in Gaza, claiming a right to self-defense. There's a reality here. that any form of violence that is used to enforce occupation, used to enforce apartheid, used to enforce settler colonialism is by definition illegitimate. It is the Palestinian people who have a right to defence and to protect themselves.
One of the main themes linking the speakers at this event is the fact that the Israeli aggression is only made possible by the tacit support of states like the British, and that Palestinian blood remains on British hands.
The UK has obligations under international humanitarian law and the Geneva Convention to look after the people who are occupied rather than stand with the oppressor, with the world's 21st century apartheid state. They must stop. They must support the Palestinians in real terms, not through words, two-state solution, which means absolutely nothing, but in sanctioning Israel, because that's the next thing that needs to happen.
Your policy on the Palestinians has to change. Justice has to prevail. And the way the hypocrisy, the way they do deal with the Palestinian issue and other issues like the Ukrainian issues, for example, is at least we can say a hypocritical way of dealing with it. So therefore, we are here today to raise our voice and tell them that this is not acceptable.
Though a ceasefire is supposed to be in force, commentators point out that this simply means Israel has moved its campaign of aggression to other parts of occupied Palestine, including Nablus, where there have already been casualties, raising the specter of an escalation resulting in further Palestinian blood being shed. Amina Taylor, London.
Israel presses ahead with its land grab policy. The regime has approved the construction of yet another settlement in the occupied Palestinian territories. Palestinian NGO says the new settlement will be established in a village in the city of Salfeit. It says the project includes the construction of nearly 400 settler units. Israel has recently ramped up its settlement expansions. Palestinians say that the move is in line with Tel Aviv's Judaization plan for the occupied territories. All the settlements are illegal under international law. Ukraine's eastern Donbas region remains focus of the ongoing Russian-Ukraine war, with the two sides now battling for a strategic town of Pisky. Heavy fighting is raging around the town amid conflicting claims. Pro-Russian groups in Donetsk say the Pisky is now under control of Russian troops and separatist forces. However, they say that there are some pockets of resistance in the town. Ukrainian officials have denied the claim, saying that the forces are continuing to fight back. The Donbas region, comprised of Luhansk and Donetsk provinces, Luhansk is now almost completely under Russian control, but Donetsk is still holding out. The region has been a scene of bloody conflict between the Ukrainian army and pro-Russian groups since the year 2014. Capturing Donbas was the main objective of Moscow since it launched a military offensive in Ukraine in February. Earlier, political commentator Janis Putkonin joined us from Luhansk for his take on the current circumstances in Ukraine.
As we saw before here in Lugansk, very crucial battles in the region of the Severodonetsk, which liberated the full region then in the end. Now the whole eyes and the efforts are in the Donetsk region, where the city has been severely getting bounded by the Ukrainian forces to all civilian regions. And of course, the breakthrough here now towards Pesky is the key of the efforts, and the well-fortified region and area near close to the capital is of course the key front where the Ukrainian resistance still exists in force. But as we have witnessed and followed now past few days, the preparations which started weeks ago are going to the key moment, and the first breakthrough towards the Pesky happened. And now we can say that in Ukrainian side, they are in a very sad meat grinder. We know that the regular Ukrainian guys are there in the front line, and they really are having hard times. As they say, we are in hell, and the allied Russian troops are now making steady steps forward and making gains which have been hoped for over 8 years here in Donbas.
Taiwan rejects one country, two systems model recently proposed by Beijing in a white paper amid rising tensions with a self-ruled island. Taiwan's foreign ministry spokeswoman, while reacting to the proposal, said that the Taiwanese people would decide their own future of the island themselves. Joanne Wu accused Beijing of using the U.S. House Speaker's visit to Taipei as a pretext to, quote, intimidate Taiwanese people. The two sides are on the collision course since Nancy Pelosi's controversial visit, with each holding military drills in a show of strength. Meanwhile, Taiwan concluded its two-day maneuvers in its southern region. China also announced wrapping up its largest ever war games around the island. China kicked off the drills after Pelosi landed in Taipei last week, despite warnings. On Wednesday, China issued yet another warning to the U.S., saying that it will fight back every provocation by Washington that undermines its sovereignty. Earlier, political commentator Andrew Leung joined us with his take on reasons behind the recent flare-ups between China and Taiwan.
The game has completely changed since the Pelosi visit, in spite of stern warning by President Xi, directed at President Biden himself during this 2.5-hour talk. But this has come after years of the United States trying to hollow out the so-called One China policy by fielding more and more senior officials to visit Taiwan and by creating more diplomatic space for Taiwan to play as if Taiwan was a separate country. So this is a real game changer as far as China is concerned, and as far as the aspirations of the entire Chinese people are concerned. And let's not forget that President Xi has made it quite plain that the unification of Taiwan has got to take place by 2049 at the latest, which is the 100th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China.
The launch of an Iranian satellite via a Russian rocket is praised as a milestone for the two countries. Iran sees it as a breakthrough since it can now use the technological achievement in various sectors. Russia, on the other hand, is expanding its relationship with Iran in the field of aerospace. All of this, however, does not bode well for the U.S. and its European partners.
Iran is making giant leaps in its peaceful space program. Iran has just launched its Khayyam satellite into orbit. The satellite was sent into space from the Moscow-operated Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. Khayyam satellite was sent into orbit on Tuesday by Soyuz 2.1B rocket. Iran says it will also use imagery from Khayyam to monitor Iran's borders and improve the country's capabilities in management and planning in the fields of agriculture, natural resources, environment, mining, and natural disasters. After all, Iran is surrounded by U.S. bases, and terrorists have preyed on Iran to enter its soil to conduct terrorist operations. Contrary to claims made by Western media outlets, Tehran insists the Khayyam satellite is fully controlled by Iranian experts and technicians based inside Iran from the very beginning of its launch. However, not everyone is happy about this satellite launch. The US expressed anger at Iran's partnership with Russia and accused Iran that the aim of the satellite is spying, something Iran has categorically rejected. The US has said they suspected that the satellite could be used by Moscow to spy on troop movements in Ukraine. Yet, Iran is resolute in its cooperation with Russia. It has said it will continue production of such satellites with Russia, adding that it's a great honor for Iranian technicians to work alongside Russian technicians who have more than six decades of experience in the field.
Yes, well, the U.S. government, of course, is particularly concerned about this. It really, in many respects, it should have seen this coming. It should have seen cooperation between states that it has under attack coming. But the arrogance, I think, of the U.S. in particular, of Washington in particular, blinds it to these sorts of developments. They could ignore the fact, for example, that small states like Syria, like Cuba, were able to cooperate together. But when large states like Iran and Russia cooperate together, there's the inevitability. There's going to be new developments which free those countries, those peoples, from the domination of the U.S.
The satellite launch has irked Washington and many of its allies, not least Israel. The U.S. claims the satellite will be used to monitor troop movements in Ukraine. Iran says that is not the case. Meanwhile, the Israeli regime has claimed that the Chayam satellite will monitor sites in the occupied territories and West Asia. Tehran has dismissed that allegation also. Chayam will be at Iran's disposal to monitor its borders. After all, Iran is surrounded by U.S. bases in the region.
The launch of Chayam satellite has been hailed as, quote, an important milestone in Russian-Iranian bilateral cooperation that paves the way for implementing new joint projects. It has ushered what Iran has dubbed as its strategic aerospace cooperation between Tehran and Moscow. Russia now says it's open to cooperation in the field of space exploration with all interested countries and partners, specifically Iran. The launch is also seen as a major achievement for Iran, despite Western sanctions.
Okay, so it's very important. The cooperation between Iran and Russia in satellite technology is very important because it shows a cooperation between large states with great capacity, which are both under economic blockade by Washington in particular. I would say Washington rather than the West, because really there are some mixed feelings in some parts of other Western countries. But certainly Washington is very jealous of any sort of independent achievement by Iran or Russia.
Iran says Western sanctions cannot stop its scientific progress. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has said that the successful launch of this satellite is a great achievement for Iran. This comes as Iran has made significant achievements in the field of science and technology in recent years. Earlier this year, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Aerospace Force launched its second homegrown satellite into a low Earth orbit nearly 2 years after the launch of its first military satellite. The IRGC successfully put Nur 2 or Light 2 into orbit on March the 8th. Iran has already mastered the technology to build remote sensing satellites with an image resolution of 5 to 10 meters and can inject up to 50 kilogram packages into an orbit of 500 kilometers. But Chayam can hit a much more precise resolution of 1 meter. Iran aims to achieve the technology to put a 100-kilogram satellite into the 500-kilometer orbit by next year.
Calls are growing again for the release of Afghanistan's assets that the U.S. has been frozen or has frozen since the Taliban takeover of the war-torn country. Several dozen prominent American and international economists have urged Washington to hand over to Afghanistan its assets. The signatories include Nobel laureates Joseph Stiglitz and Yanis Varoufakis. In a letter to President Joe Biden and the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, they expressed concern over economic and humanitarian catastrophes unfolding in Afghanistan and have blamed them on U.S. policy. They argued Washington could not justify holding on to the reserves and warned that Afghanistan would collapse if it did not get the money back. Washington is freezing more than $9 billion in assets belonging to the Afghan Central Bank. The UN and other international bodies had previously urged the U.S. government to unfreeze the assets to allow Afghanistan deal with its crises. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In the US, federal investigators have seized the cell phone of the Republican Congressman Scott Perry on Tuesday, 9th of August. His office has confirmed, suggesting the Justice Department is examining the communications of a close ally of Donald Trump and person of interest to the House January 6th Select Committee. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Hugo Lowell. The piece is titled, Congressman and Trump Ally Scott Perry Says FBI Seized His Cell Phone. In the U.S., federal investigators have seized the cell phone of the Republican Congressman Scott Perry on Tuesday, 9th of August. His office has confirmed, suggesting the Justice Department is examining the communications of a close ally of Donald Trump and a person of interest to the House January 6th Select Committee. The move by the FBI to take Scott Perry's phone came a day after federal agents executed a search warrant on Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence and seized boxes of documents, though it was not clear whether the two events were connected. Scott Perry, the prominent Republican from Pennsylvania, who is also the chair of the ultra-conservative House Freedom Caucus and has been subpoenaed by the House Select Committee, confirmed that his cell phone was taken by federal investigators in a statement earlier reported by Fox News Channel. This morning, while traveling with my family, three FBI agents visited me and seized my cell phone. They made no attempt to contact my lawyer, who would have made arrangements for them to have my phone if that was their wish, Scott Perry said in a statement. My phone contains information about my legislative and political activities and personal private discussions with my wife, my family, constituents, and friends. None of this is the government's business. The Republican congressman, one of Donald Trump's most vociferous defenders on Capitol Hill, compared the seizure of his phone to the FBI's search of Donald Trump's Palm Beach resort, Mar-a-Lago, claiming, without evidence, that the moves were politically motivated overreach by the Biden administration. As with President Trump last night, the Department of Justice chose this unnecessary and aggressive action instead of simply contacting my attorneys. These kinds of banana republic tactics should concern every American citizen, Scott Perry said, of the court-approved warrant used by the FBI. The circumstances surrounding the seizure of Scott Perry's phone could not immediately be established, and a spokesperson for Scott Perry did not respond to questions about the nature of the criminal investigation under which the FBI took his device. But Perry has come under increased scrutiny in recent months over Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election results with respect to his roles in objecting to the certification of Joe Biden's election win and in seeking to remove top Justice Department officials. The Republican Congressman Scott Perry has refused to testify to the House Select Committee to answer questions about those issues, despite a subpoena. His lawyer, John Rawley, also representing Donald Trump himself, has said Scott Perry did nothing improper with respect to the Capitol attack. Still, the seizure of his cell phone appears to suggest that Scott Perry's communications have become ensnared in a criminal investigation. According to the House Select Committee, Scott Perry is also among several House Republicans who sought a preemptive pardon from Donald Trump after the January 6th insurrection. Meanwhile, shockwaves spread across America in response to the news that the FBI had searched the private Florida residence of Donald Trump, a dramatic and unprecedented move that prompted threats of retaliation from the former U.S. president and his allies. It also brought calls for accountability from his opponents and inspired speculation about what it could mean for Donald Trump's plans to run for the White House again in 2024, as some suggested it may prompt him to announce a candidacy before vital midterm elections this November. Kevin McCarthy, the House minority leader, threatened to investigate the U.S. Justice Department if his party wins control of the chamber next year, which forecasts suggest is probable. "I've seen enough," the California Republican, Kevin McCarthy, wrote in a statement that he posted online. "The Department of Justice has reached an intolerable state of weaponized politicization." He went further, hinting that should he wield the gavel next year, House Republicans would open a congressional investigation into the Attorney General Merrick Garland. "Attorney General Garland, preserve your documents and clear your calendar," he wrote. Democrats who have pushed the department to bring criminal charges against the former president for his role in the 6th of January 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol welcomed the raid. "It is horrible precedent for the Department of Justice to investigate a former president of the United States," said Congressman Ted Lieu, a Democrat from California who was a manager during Trump's second impeachment trial. "The only worse precedent would be for the Justice Department not to investigate because the person happens to be a former president of the United States. No one is above the law." Democrats also accused the Republicans of hypocrisy after years of calling for the prosecution of Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump's 2016 Democratic rival in the presidential race, over questions of whether she mishandled classified information by using a private email server. Donald Trump sought to exploit the investigation and encourage chants of "lock her up" during his campaign rallies. Referring to Kevin McCarthy, Congressman Don Beyer, a Democrat from Virginia, said, "This man and his fellow bootlickers hid under a rock rather than respond every time Donald Trump called for persecution, investigation, imprisonment, or violence against his political opponents. These same people talk about Donald Trump like he's above the law. He is not above the law." The FBI's presence at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach on Monday was reportedly related to the investigation into whether Trump unlawfully took classified documents from the White House to his Florida residence rather than turn them over to the National Archives. Some Democrats have gleefully pointed out that a possible, albeit unlikely, punishment for mishandling sensitive government documents is disqualification from holding future federal office.
السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله.
وإنما خرجت لطلب الإصلاح في أمة جدي صلى الله عليه وآله.
The words of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in dialogue.
Sallallahu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the son of the Lady of Light, the esteemed Fatima, the son of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, the grandson of the esteemed and honorable Prophet Muhammad. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the beacon of light which guides towards salvation and prosperity, the one who addresses Allah on the day of Ashura, saying, "In so many difficulties and sorrows, I have unburdened myself upon you and brought my grievances before you, O Allah. This is because I lean on you and I am inclined towards you. I tend towards no other." Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the master of martyrs, these are his words. Imam al-Hussein's words near Karbala. "Surely we are for Allah, and to Him we shall return. And may all praise be to Allah. I took a short nap and dreamt a horseman who was heralding, 'The people travel at night and death travels to them.' So I learned that it was the news of our death. May Allah reward you the best of the reward."
As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdillah wa ala al-arwahi allati حلت بفنائي عليك مني.
Dear audience, now let's listen to some parts of زيارة الناحية المقدسة. Stay tuned.
وبقي الليل والنهار. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام على الحسين الذي سمحت نفسه بمهجته.
Peace be upon al-Hussein, who sacrificed himself up to the last drops of the blood of his heart.
السلام على من أطاع الله في سره وعلانيته.
Peace be upon him who obeyed Allah secretly and openly.
السلام على من جعل الله الشفاء في تربته.
Peace be upon whom Allah placed a cure in the soul of his place of martyrdom.
السلام على من الإجابة تحت قبته.
Peace be upon the one under whose dome answer to supplications is guaranteed.
السلام على من الأئمة من ذريته.
Peace be upon the one in whose descendants are the Imams after him.
As-salamu ala ibn khatim al-anbiya. As-salamu ala ibn sayyid al-aghsiya.
Peace be upon the son of the seal of the prophets. Peace be upon the son of the chief of the executors.
As-salamu ala ibn fatimah al-zahra. السلام على ابن خديجة الكبرى.
Peace be upon the son of Fatima, the radiant. Peace be upon the son of Khadija, the great.
السلام على ابن سدرة المنتهى. السلام على ابن جنة المأوى السلام على ابن زمزم والصفا.
Peace be upon the son of the low tree in the outermost boundary of heaven. Peace be upon the son of the garden of refuge. Peace be upon the son of Zamzam and As-Safa.
As-Salamu ala al-Murammal bid-Dima. As-Salamu ala al-Mahduk al-Khiba. As-Salamu ala khamis ashab ahl al-Kasaya.
Peace be upon him who was saturated in his blood. Peace be upon him whose tents were violated. Peace be upon the fifth of the people of the cloak.
And now let's listen to Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhr Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin as-Sain sallallahu alayka wa abdullah. Assalamu alayka wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is an episode of the program Dialogue, and I'm Dr. Fakhr Rouhani. When Imam al-Husayn al-Salam was on the way near Karbala, well, in daytime, he felt very much exhausted. And it was necessary for him to take a short nap. At the same time, we find that when Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam reached the station Qasr Bani Muqatil, at night time, he ordered his male companions to fill leather water flasks with water to collect as much water as they could. When they were on the way toward al-Kufa, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam pronounced the Quranic verse, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. And this Quranic verse indicates that death news is going to come. Or, for example, the death news of a person has already come. Then we find that Imam al-Husayn's elder son, Ali al-Akbar, inquired of the reason for Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam's doing so. Then Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam indicated that during the brief nap that he had, he witnessed in dream that someone gave him the martyrdom news. The martyrdom news of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam and his companions. And then it's very instructive that Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam's elder son, Ali al-Akbar, never felt any agitation. And he asserted that so long as we are on the rightful side, on the rightful way, we wouldn't be distressed, we wouldn't be concerned with receiving death and being martyred. In this context, it's very important that the sons of Imam al-Husayn al-Salam and his close companions were really carefully selected people. And the being carefully selected people was because they accompanied Imam al-Husayn al-Salam out of their own will, and there was no imposition whatsoever. Here we find that Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam's gesture was to inform his companions, and first and foremost his close companions, and in this case his elder son, that the martyrdom scene will be certain, nothing would deter it. And Ali al-Akbar was ready, for martyrdom over there, in Karbala. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. Assalamu alaykum wa abdullah.
Assalamu alaykum ya Aba Abdin.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Dialogue. We hope that you remain under the auspicious grace of Imam Hussein today and always.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
While sky-high gas prices were draining the public's wallets at a pump, a new report reveals that big oil corporations across the board were bragging about their profits in meetings and making plans to enrich executives and shareholders with their record revenues. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Sharon Jung, journalist. This article is published under the heading Exxon laid out plans to spend $30 billion in stock buybacks as gas prices soared. Stay tuned for more. While sky-high gas prices in the U.S. were draining the public's wallets at a pump, a new report reveals that big oil corporations across the board were bragging about their profits in meetings and making plans to enrich executives and shareholders with the record revenues. The Groundwork Collaborative analyzed shareholder and analyst calls within major oil companies like Exxon, Shell, and Chevron, and discovered that executives have effectively been celebrating high gas prices. In calls from the second quarter of this year, which just ended, the companies emphasized that their primary goals were to maximize profits and returns to shareholders and admitted that inflation and economic uncertainty are an opportunity for them. Over the past months, gas prices have soared and oil companies are posting record profits as a result. The fossil fuel industry and conservatives have pointed to factors like the crisis in Eastern Europe and the COVID economy as being the primary reasons for high prices. But as climate advocates have said, the industry is playing a huge role in keeping prices inflated. In an earnings call in late July, for instance, Shell CEO Ben Van Beurden said that while there is some instability and reduced production as a result of the conflict in Eastern Europe, what little of it that is happening is good for business. We do have a bullish outlook on oil and gas prices generally and in the areas of greater stress like in Europe, Van Beurden said on a July 28 call on Shell's quarter second earnings, adding, and that is why we are also quite confident to say that, hey, if the conditions that we are witnessing today are persisting, then we expect to be paying out more than 30% of our cash flow to shareholders and buybacks. Meanwhile, Chevron executives noted in a July 29th call that while the company's production decreased by 7% from last year, the second quarter earnings increased by a towering $8 billion over the same period last year. The earnings calls are further evidence that the fossil fuel industry is using high inflation and instability to profiteer. Climate advocates and lawmakers have called for a windfall tax on the oil and gas industry to discourage them from inflating gas prices. The Groundwork Collaborative condemned the companies for taking advantage of consumers who are already struggling with high inflation in other sectors. The data is in. As Americans hit their breaking point with high prices at a pump, big oil CEOs are using the crisis to bring in the eye-popping profits. Lindsay Owens, Groundwork Collaborative Executive Director, said in a statement, adding, Exxon brought in $2,245 a second in the second quarter. That's not a strong quarter. It's a one-way racket. Oil and gas corporations have been posting record earnings this year across six of the largest oil corporations. The Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC, has found that the second quarter earnings have jumped nearly 250% this year over 2021's second quarter earnings. In some cases, revenues for these companies have reached all-time highs. Exxon and Chevron have both reported making record-breaking profits and revenues over the past 3 months. Exxon's income between April and June was $17.9 billion, or more than triple its income over the same period last year. Chevron similarly experienced a highly profitable quarter, with profits more than tripling over 2021 second quarter, reaching $11.6 billion. As gas prices reached an average of over $5 a gallon in June, these corporations turned around and spent their record-breaking earnings on stock buybacks. The NRDC found that the same six companies that have multiplied their earnings have spent a hair-raising $18 billion on stock buybacks. As the companies told their shareholders, they are planning on keeping these buybacks going. Exxon said in a July earnings call that it is planning on spending $30 billion on stock buybacks over this year and the next, while predicting that gas prices will stay high for years. Chevron and Shell also said that higher earnings are allowing them to increase stock buybacks this year.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Please send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we would like to recite for our esteemed listeners a beautiful hadith, which has been narrated from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And this hadith is about good actions. In this hadith, the Imam provides us with a good method which we can adopt, by means of which we can make sure our actions that we perform are all good and noble. As you know, we are in the month of Muharram, a very solemn and sacred month for the followers of Imam Hussein, the followers of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam, as well as for all of the freedom-loving people of the world. In this month, in order to better benefit from this month, aside from all of the various acts of worship that we perform, the the commemoration of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the weeping and the lamentation that we do. Aside from this, it really is important to remind ourselves of the mission of Imam Hussein, the reason why he stood up and revolted, and the reason why he actually refused to pay allegiance to the tyrants of the time, as well as, in general terms, looking at the wisdom that he imparted to us, and which was passed down to us from the narrators of hadith and traditions. One of those hadith is the hadith we would like to recite for you today. This blessed hadith has been narrated in the famous book of Hadith, Bihar al-Anwar, volume 75, page 127. It is the 10th hadith in that location, in that place. The Imam says the following. He says that you should act as a person who knows that he will be taken account of for his crimes. Meaning you should act in such a way that you are certain that the crime that you might commit will be taken account of and will be punished. You shouldn't act with the assumption that, or like a person who thinks that he, even though he might commit a crime, he might not be punished for it. Because we're talking about crimes related to a religion. And here, God Almighty is watching us. He has the power to punish us. He has the ability to do so. He knows what we're doing, right? So there's no reason why we wouldn't be punished for what we were doing, the crime, right? So we should remember this. It will help prevent us from performing these bad deeds. And also, we should act as a person who knows and who is certain that he will be rewarded for his good deeds, right? If we know this and we remember this, because remember that the person who is rewarding us is God, who knows what we're doing,